And now we are going to go to an interview with Mr. Kelly Duda. Good morning, Mr. Kelly Duda.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm fine. We're going to be discussing your movie. You are the writer-director of the new documentary. It's called Factor Eight, the Arkansas... It's called the Arkansas Prison Blood Scandal. Is that correct?
Right.
You were just out in California for the American Film Institute Awards. How did that go?
It went extremely well, in fact.
Did you, were you able to get, where people seem very interested and people seem like they're gonna show this around the country?
Yeah, I was actually kind of surprised because I've been working on this for quite some time, and you kind of, after a while, exist in your own vacuum, or at least it seems, because it's such a difficult story for a lot of people to swallow, one, and two, because I think it's so charged, and a lot of people bring their own world views into something like this. It's a story that upsets people, and so you don't know how they're going to respond. But there was quite a buzz there at the AFI Fest about the film, and at the awards ceremony, Factor Eight, they received an honorable mention, and there was a huge roar from the crowd, which really surprised me. So it was a good start, and we're looking forward to the next film festival, and we're looking forward to distribution options and getting it seen up there in your neck of the woods as well.
Yeah, we'd love to have that. We definitely want to have it come up here. Can we start by, can you give us a little background about how you came to find out about the story, what made you want to create this piece of work, and, you know, how this all got started?
Sure. Okay. Factor Eight, the Arkansas Prison Blood Scandal, is a story about how tainted blood was harvested from the Arkansas prison population and sold to unsuspecting patients, victims, internationally, and infected them with HIV/AIDS and hepatitis C. I had come back to Arkansas. I'm a native Arkansan, and started hearing stories in the late 90s. Of course, there were a lot of stories going around. The right wing was really trying to clobber Bill Clinton, as you remember, and I wasn't much for that, but I had left Arkansas when I was a kid and really didn't know how things worked here, and started hearing a few tales that were just really disturbing from people that I didn't expect to hear it from about the good old boy system and how things operated here. And one of them that I heard was about, it wasn't even a story, it was just an alleged series of events that occurred in the 80s about how blood was being collected from the inmate population here, and I was offended immediately by that very notion that we'd be collecting blood from prisoners. And knowing the history of the Cummins prison farm, I don't know if you've ever seen, a movie called Brubaker starring Robert Redford.
Yeah, I've actually seen that, yeah.
That came out in 1980. Well, that was about this same prison farm. So, I mean, I knew, and people from Arkansas were aware of how brutal and corrupt the history of the Arkansas prison system was, and I believe to a large extent still is. And so, just horrified by the very notion of that, I began sort of looking into it. I had a few friends that had been incarcerated down there, and I started asking questions, and the more I looked into it, the more I found, and it just kind of tentacled out from there. If I had any idea, though, how long I'd have to work on it and all the things that would happen or transpire even to me during the process, I don't know that I would have done it. But I must tell you that the reason why I did embark on this quest, if you will, is because I felt that if something bad had happened in my home state that hurt people, then I had a moral duty or social responsibility to do something. Because if I didn't, when I was talking to these people, I realized that the story would never get told.
Well,
I had no idea at that time that there was a Canadian tainted blood scandal, by the way.
Yeah, and up here it was a huge story for a while, and just the American media just completely shut it out. They didn't.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the whole prison blood angle of it. I remember when Mark Kennedy printed some stories in the Ottawa Citizen. He did that with my research. But there's still a lot left on this leg of that debacle that your country still is having to endure, left to be told. And I believe that, you know, I was naive. I did not know that there'd be political fallout potentially in your country, as well as hear for those that were either asleep at the switch or knew what was going on. I thought, hey, you know, I've got this great information for Canada, and I was told at one point by a member of parliament, are you out of your mind? You could cost this country $1 billion. And it was only then I thought, what, you mean to tell me there'd be reasons why people wouldn't want this information?
Oh, yeah.
You know, so.
Well, Pierre Bourque, I mean, it's just a complete nightmare. All right. Well, and it's an international. I mean, you sent me an email, I believe, yesterday or the day before. I mean, in Japan, they're still suing and doing pulling all sorts of actions because of this, right?
Yeah, absolutely. When Canada stopped purchasing this blood from the Arkansas Department of Correction, it began going to Japan through a company called Alpha Therapeutics. And then people believe to the Green Cross in Japan, where it was put into a product called fibrinogen, another blood clotting medication that was administered to a lot of thousands of women during childbirth, and it was loaded with Hep C. This blood also went to Europe, and it was subject to recalls just as it was in Canada and in Japan and in South Korea. And in Australasia, so yeah, it went all over.
So let's start real quick. Factor VIII is a blood clotting.
Factor VIII basically, there's a protein in your body that allows your blood to collect, to coagulate, and it's divided into various factors. And so Factor VIII is also a name of a product that's made from blood plasma that hemophiliacs will infuse into their bodies to stop bleeding episodes so that they can live relatively normal lives. And prior to that, there was cryoprecipitate, which was better than just, you know, regular plasma that you're flooding your body with, but it was cumbersome. So the gift of life, unfortunately, became the gift of death for a lot of bleeders, as they were called.
Was most of this plasma sold outside of the United States, or was all of it sold outside of the United States? Or was
there was a period of time when it was perfectly all right for this blood to be sold here, but with the advent of AIDS, the CDC tried to the FDA, and the FDA said to the pharmaceutical companies here, we would like it if you'd stop using prison plasma, but there's never been a law against it. The pressure was applied, and then, there had always been a world market for it, but it really switched over at that point to being strictly across the border or overseas. And there was a blood broker in Montreal that was more than happy to purchase all he could get. And that blood broker would have known that in Canada, such blood had not been collected from the inmate population since 1971. I mean, at one point, you guys up there were on a complete donor system. You weren't paying people for plasma, for blood. And so, unfortunately, the end users in Canada and all over, for that matter, had no idea where the source of this high-risk blood was coming from. And then, unfortunately, it could be labeled as Canadian product and sent around the world, even back into the United States, and people would think it was higher quality product and not know that it was actually coming from a prison system. So that blood broker sold it to a fractionator called Connaught Laboratories in Canada that then distributed to the Red Cross. And then patients used that product. It was also the subject of a couple of international recalls in your country, but unfortunately, supposedly, that's when the cat was out of the bag, and the people inside knew that they were getting Arkansas prison plasma, but there are plenty of reasons to believe that they knew all along, and it was just now time where that source couldn't be used anymore. But I uncovered evidence to show that even after the recalls and even after the Bureau of Biologics had implemented procedures and the companies involved had implemented procedures to make sure that this never happened again, that it kept happening.
They kept importing this kind of stuff?
Absolutely, from the same prison system, in fact.
Incredible.
I don't see how the government can continue to claim that they they shouldn't be compensating victims prior to 86. Certainly, I think my film shows negligence. It raises these questions and issues, which I believe from, and I got to understand, I'm an American, I mean from the States, but I'm also a North American. I'm not privy to all the details and intricacies of the politicking that's going on up there, but you know, why is the ruling party stalling on compensation for these victims? Once again, you've got an election coming up, and there's more stalling, and the more you stall, the more people are going to suffer, and the more they're going to die. And I believe the Canadian people want what's right for all the victims. And certainly, they can claim ignorance, which I don't buy, but how can you claim ignorance after the cat was out of the bag and supposedly you'd put measures into place to prevent this from happening again, and it kept happening. And the reason why it kept happening is the same reason why it was happening down here and all over, money. Somebody's making money off of it.
And so, and I think we don't really have any current figures, but I think the last figures, unless you have them, the last figures that I read was in 1997, at least 3,000 people had died here in Canada, and at least 20,000 people were infected with hepatitis C.
Yeah.
So, I mean, who knows what those numbers are now?
Right. I mean, and I don't, yeah, and that, therein lies kind of the difficulty in being able to trace this stuff, because the blood plasma was thrown into pools of up to 20 to maybe even 100,000 donors. And so, you know, one bad batch or even one bad unit could potentially infect thousands upon thousands of people. And I think the drug companies in the past have kind of hidden behind that. Well, you don't know that the blood came from this source. But when there were certain international recalls, and when they try to recall the product, 90% of it couldn't be, so it was infused. And all that showed you was it was a day in a life of maybe the Arkansas prison system. And you know, every day that there wasn't a recall, there should have been. And when you see this film, your jaw will drop when you realize just how bad things were. And so it was malfeasance at a grand scale. And, I don't think there's been any sincere effort on part of even the RCMP to look into this this leg of the problem. I know that, again, this is just from my point of view, but I believe that the 55-man task force that they touted and the 24-hour 800 number was just a ruse. I think it was a PR effort. They want to get beyond this. There's a trial coming up based upon the Armour incident, where, it, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not a lawyer, and but that case wouldn't require a lot of investigating. It has to do with whether blood products from Armour were being heat treated at a certain temperature or not. So,
yeah,
there's not a big long a trail to have to follow. And that could be tidied up potentially quite quickly from an investigation point of view. I don't know how it's going to pan out in court, but I mean, I have to ask myself, why is it that the Canadian people don't know more about what you and I are talking about today? I don't know.
Well, first of all, let me just I just want to make something clear. Now, you're not out to bash Clinton.
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay. No. This is something that is just a basic moral thing. I mean, it's sick. That's what it is.
I saw George Clooney speak at the American Film Institute, and he said, you know, not that he's some beacon of great knowledge as to what we should be doing today. He's an actor, and he'd be the first one to tell you this. But he's taking on challenges today, and I think he's doing some interesting stuff. And he said that he believed today's reporters need to start asking the tough questions. His father was a broadcaster for 25 years, and he asked questions, tough questions, of every party and of every candidate and every president during that period. So, I say, does that mean we just ask tough questions to the other side? I don't believe so. I think we're talking about accountability. This isn't just about bad blood. It's not about just bad blood safety issues. It's about accountability of leadership. It's about a gross misuse of the public trust and goodwill. This goes well beyond because right now there's something else going on. And if the Canadian people or the Australian people or the British people or the American people don't hold their leadership accountable, then more horrible things are going to happen. So, no, I have no axe to grind with Bill Clinton. I'm completely nonpartisan when it comes to this story. I'm just a guy in Arkansas asking questions. And in the United States of America, you're supposed to be able to ask questions. But I found sometimes, depending upon the questions you ask, walls go up.
Well, let's talk about that, because first of all, this film took 7 years to make. Is that correct?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, yeah. And you encountered a lot of difficulty over that time. Can you give us a little idea of what kind of stuff you ran into? Well, politicians don't like when you start prying into their closets.
Yeah, and I sometimes feel a little awkward talking about this stuff, because I think, I've had my tires slashed, I had my house gone through, I had reporters' notes of mine mysteriously appear on the World Wide Web, including stuff that just people didn't need to be seeing. I don't know how it got there. I've been followed. I've had a lot of. I was sued at one point. There was a campaign in this town to try to destroy my reputation, my work, my name. A lot of just frightening things that happen over a period of time. You don't always know where the connection lies, but I'd be kidding myself to think that there wasn't some of it didn't have to do with what I was working on. I mean, I've never had anything like this happen to me before, and it's no fun, trust me, and I say this with all clarity, because as a journalist, you can't get paranoid, because that's not going to help you ferret out the truth. It's not going to help you find the facts. You just got to duck your head and keep running, keep moving toward your goal, and just trying to obtain the facts and expose the story. But I don't think there's any question that. There are people. I mean, we see horrible things that happen every day, and it seems and it can be random. So it's not beyond the pale of plausibility that when you're talking about millions of dollars that were made, that there might be people out there that wouldn't want someone like me snooping around.
Let me ask one quick question. I don't want to give your film away and whatever. Did you? What kind of connection did you see with Mr. Foster?
Mr. Foster. Well, it's a big question mark, because basically Linda Tripp talks about, everybody remembers the notorious Linda Tripp.
Yes.
Excuse me. Say what you want to about Linda Tripp. I don't believe she lied about anything, though. You can debate about whether she should have done what she did, but I don't think you can call a liar. And Vince Foster's name was linked, as well as hers, to the Tainted Blood scandal a few years before any story would ever be told in the media up there. Apparently, around 1993, Linda Tripp was in Vince Foster's office at Deb Gorham's desk, who was his secretary, executive secretary, and she received a call on a private line, and I don't know the details of this conversation, but someone was communicating to her about an issue that apparently Vince Foster had been talking to Bill Clinton about regarding a tainted blood issue shortly before he died, and this person was concerned that it may have had something to do with his death. And when she tried to access files, apparently there were files in Vince Foster's computer shared by his secretary on a network titled Tainted Blood, she was denied access. And so you have to ask yourself, it begs the question, what was that about? Was the White House tracking this issue before it was even being printed in the media up there? I don't know. I know that once the beginnings of this story were printed 5 years later, the White House would act as if they knew nothing about any of these stories up in Canada. And, you know, the embassy was, you know, within walking distance of the Ottawa Citizen. And so it was ridiculous. And what are they doing if they have an embassy up there in your country, if they don't know about front page stories, you know, related to the White House in the United States? I just don't buy that.
Yeah, I don't think anybody
buys it. But ultimately, I don't know where that leads, but it's very, very curious.
It's interesting. I mean, well, also, there's so many scandals going on at that time that you can't tell. Okay, well, I've been talking with Mr. Kelly Duda. He has a new movie out. It's called Factor 8, The Arkansas Prison Blood Scandal. And you can visit the website. It's called factor8movie.com. And I want to thank you for joining us this morning, and I hope you can bring this film up to us up here in Montreal and
thank you so much.
Here in Canada.
It's very important, and I appreciate having an opportunity to speak to you and the students there. This is an important issue, and the people who are going to be running your country and the world tomorrow need to hear about it.
Okay. Well, you have a good morning.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.